I'm talking with Noel Paul Stuckey, best known as a solo musician and one-third of the iconic folk music trio Peter, Paul, and Mary. Welcome, Noel, and we really appreciate you making the time to talk today, so thanks.
Oh, well, thank you, Dan. I'm looking forward to coming back to the Midwest. As I said when we spoke earlier, I'm from Michigan, but that could be a deadly term in terms of football rivalries. But there's something affable about being in the Midwest that I miss out here on the taciturn East Coast.
Well, we are more than happy to welcome you back. And for what it's worth, we have a few listeners from Michigan, and we frequently get requests from the Lower Peninsula and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So we are definitely a Wisconsin show, but we also take in a good part of the Midwest. So we're happy to have you back.
Well, great. And Simply Folk, huh?
Yeah.
Who are some of the more contemporary folk artists that you are playing now?
Well, it's funny. I was just looking at the new CD from Lucy Kaplansky, and of course we have Old Crow Medicine Show's latest CD on there, and really enjoy a lot of Guy Davis on the show. So we try to do a wide variety of things, and also like to focus on Wisconsin artists as well. So we kind of think of folk music as a big tent here at Simply Folk.
That's great. We do too. The tendency at a Peter Yarrow and Noel Paul Stuckey concert, you know, noting the passing of Mary in 2009, is to do a lot of the Peter, Paul, and Mary material, and in many instances, the audience becomes Mary. I mean, in a very sweet, poetic way. You know, they sometimes sing her part. Sometimes, as Peter has pointed out from time to time, there's that kind of mystical aura that hangs over the remembrance of some of these tunes, and you almost feel like you can hear her voice guiding us. But as my roommate Tom Paxton used to say, it's okay to look at the past, but you don't want to get caught staring at it.
And yeah.
When you gave me your playlist, you know, when you spoke of these new artists that you have, we try to incorporate new material in our shows as well. Certainly my solo concerts, I do maybe a quarter of the concert or a fifth of the concert. But in the trio concerts, I mean the Peter Yarrow and Noel Paul Stuckey concerts, we do mostly the songs from the Peter, Paul, and Mary era with a few new ones thrown in our solo sections particularly.
Well, I know you just recently came out with a 4-song EP, Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring. You cover a lot, you know, listening to that, some wonderful music on there, and you cover a lot of ground in just 4 songs, from the personal to the political, which, you know, seems typical of your career. What has been the reaction to those songs at the shows you've been doing?
Well, when I first started doing I Will Stand, the audience reaction was really quite powerful. I was trying to sing the song in a linear fashion, and I would be interrupted after every line of the song because there were so many people who were looking for a musical articulation of how they were feeling, the frustration around some of the political decisions that were being made out of Washington. So, you know, I could say that there was a very loud response to Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring. But oddly enough, you know, if you look at record sales, which is sometimes an indication of the popularity of something, Impeachable is still the far and away the more popular of the tunes. I think it's because in these times we really do need a dash of humor with our political candor. I'm not sure how much of it is actually available in Washington, so I think when people get a chance to hear something musically funny that has a political base to it, they love it. I remember that's what I used to love about Tom Paxton's material as well when we worked together in the Village. But the, you know, the highlight of that album for the Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring to me was Something Special, which was the story of me growing up in kind of semi-autobiographical story of me growing up in Dorsey, Maryland, and the surprise that came on Christmas Day. And that actually has triggered a holiday album that'll be out in mid-November called Something Special, A Recollection, with 12 tunes. And I've really had a great deal of fun putting it together because it spans some of the holiday music that we're all familiar with and touches on these personal moments as well, childhood remembrances.
Well, you and I were talking before we started the interview about your website, and it has a timeline on there with some really, I was saying, some really nice stories. I would encourage listeners to go there and read a few of those. And do you find yourself at this stage of your writing kind of looking back on some of those stories and some of your roots and incorporating that more into the music, or is it just something that's always been there?
I think, when, like most people, I tend to connect my past with my present. When something happens, I go, oh, I remember that, or something like that happened to me as well. And I think it's those moments that are connected for me, my childhood and my contemporary scene. And also, I'm 80 years old now, Dan, so I've got grandkids galore. I got, one of them in college. And so the span of children's appreciation of the holiday time, as well as their lives and watching them discover some of the same things that I discovered at their age, that's always an inspiration for creating a song. If you see the moments, if you want to share the moment with them and recollect, and then realize I tend not to write songs unless there's a universality. If there's something personal that happened in our lives that has a broader reach, something that maybe you would have gone through, then there's a good chance I'll try to write a song about it.
Okay. Well, you mentioned being 80 years old, and I know you've been performing for over 60 years, ever since your high school group, the Birds of Paradise, and of course,
ooh, you do your homework.
Hey, it's it was an interesting, like I said, it was an interesting read on your website, and after touring and traveling for that long, what keeps pushing you out there to keep doing this? What gives you the energy to? Because traveling's not easy, I know.
Yeah, although you get pretty good at it after years, and it's not like I'm riding in a bus, on 24-hour trips. I'll take a plane trip out and a plane trip back, and that's pretty easy if you can navigate TSA at the terminal, And after you've done it for a while, they get to know your face. And so you just show them a card that says, yeah, I've been here before. And that lets you get in a special line and you move more quickly. So the travel is, it's diminishing also because I want to spend more time with my love of, 55 years. Betty and I met in high school and got married in 1963 and moved to the coast of Maine in 1974, and I'll tell you, it's like the movie says, it's a wonderful life. Mm. And if you don't take time to be thankful for it in one place, then you've kind of missed the point of it. So I respond to invitations, and I do enjoy performing, but I have my physical limitations as well. My hands don't work quite as fast as they used to. But as long as I can be creative, find some physical expression of my imagination, then I'll probably continue to be the only child syndrome personified. And just create my own world and take it with me.
Well, we talked to Peter about a year ago, and I got the sense from him that he felt like there was something about this moment in our community and in our country and our society that called for the music that you and Peter are doing right now. Do you think that's true?
Oh, most definitely. And not only calling for it from us, who I think maybe to our constituency are the most familiar people to bring that music, but also it's calling to a younger generation of musicians. My daughter runs an organization, you might look it up online actually, called Music to Life, which celebrates and encourages young activist artists who not only sing the songs that articulate the concerns of their community, but also engage in the day-to-day work of those particular nonprofits. It's a laudable and very, how shall I say, needed involvement of the musical community with the world around us now. In this era where people are pointing fingers and accusing each other of false news and telling lies, there's something about the eternal and emotional truth of a song that allows us to intersect and to come together. I'm finding more and more in my concerts that the more talk there is about love, the less time there is to talk about the hatred.
Well, you know, I was reading about the organization. It does sound like a great effort that you and Elizabeth have gotten started here. Are there, now I know that you work with organizations and work with events, but it also sounds like you work with musicians. Are there any musicians you think our listeners should be, or us as a show should be on the lookout or keeping an ear out for?
They pass through so quickly, and there are so many of them. I think I would be doing them a disfavor, you know, by mentioning
one or two.
I think just go online and look at the musicians that the Music to Life has supported and are continuing to support. We have a big fundraiser double show at a large facility in Berkeley, California, coming up, where we are going to create a panel, a kind of a panel discussion at the same time with other artists and with people in the business to speak about how music of social change can more easily interface with our day-to-day. It's not to say that music doesn't have a plain entertainment value as well. I think many people, you know, would be hard pressed to deny that it's not fun to dance. but there are moments in our life when I think we turn to the arts to express the inexpressible, to really touch on the inner core of how we're feeling about certain circumstances. And as you suggested, yes, this is a time that is fraught where distrust among many branches of our day-to-day have tended to distress us. You know, I talk to a lot of people who don't read the news now in the morning anymore because it is so depressing. But they'll turn on the radio and listen to Pandora, and they'll listen to music that, you know, brings us all together. And that's what folk music has always attempted to do in a very community sense. It reaches to the heart of all of us.
Well, I think I think you're right about that sense of how folk music gathers us together. I think one of the challenges with any genre, but folk music too, and I think it's been one of the historic knocks on it, has been, well, if you've got a message, it doesn't matter how good the music is. But I think what you talk about, and I think what Peter, Paul, and Mary and you as a solo artist have done is the importance of making sure it's quality music too, that this is something good to listen to, and that and it does have a message behind it, so they're kind of bringing the two together.
Well, it is true that we spent an inordinate amount of time when we were a trio arguing over fine details, and I'm sure that showed up in people's appreciation. You know, sometimes it was the line of a song that was too on the nose. You know, we felt that it was an overstatement. Sometimes it was not pertinent enough. But many instances, we would just step out and write something, but keep it in the genre. For instance, Phil Oakes' There But For Fortune, which is a, you know, a very well-known and almost traditional tune now, had no bridge. That is to say, no musical bridge. But Peter, Mary, and I felt that there, we really needed to make some statement about world hunger. And so we wrote a bridge. And I mean, we never wanted credit for it, you know, financially or even on the album. I don't think that we recorded it on. We didn't put our names as authors. But that's the function of folk music, is to take a piece of music. It might be well known, it might be brand new, but to make it pertinent. And at the same time, as you pointed out, keep the quality of the original expression.
Sure. Well, when we started out the conversation, you mentioned Mary's passing in 2009 in the audience, sort of Mary at the concerts. And I wanted to ask you, sort of asking the obvious, I suppose, but, you know, what was that like for you and Peter to start performing as a duo instead of as a trio? I'm sure that was challenging in many different ways. Has that continued to be that way, or?
Well, there's an emptiness. I mean, there's going to be, certainly initially, kind of a shock and an awareness that a very important part of your life is missing. I think it's very similar to, you know, losing your mate in a relationship. But I think the big surprise was, and I tried to indicate that we spoke earlier, is that the audience really steps up to the plate. I mean, they are so there and so supportive, and then so much, in a sense, feeling the loss in the same constructive way that Peter and I do, that it becomes a kind of a celebration, you know, kind of a joyous remembrance and a rededication, if you will, to those principles that are, you know, expressed in this amazing thing called folk music.
Yeah. We've talked a lot in this conversation about music and social activism, but I know spirituality has also been a big part of your life and your career. And a lot has been at that intersection of music and social activism and spirituality. What is it that ties those three aspects together for you?
Well, you know, you have to investigate ultimately why people like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger and Cisco Houston and Josh White maintain their continual absorption in these matters of people's rights and equity, and what's the conscience? What is the ethic that creates these songs and made these people such icons? And I can't help but feel that spiritually, it's all about love. You know, the Beatles had it. You know, they may not have expressed it in folk music terms, but guess what? All You Need Is Love is now a folk tune, if you think about it, because a lot of people sing it. And the more and more people that can live it are the ones that I think are making real progress in the world and creating an aura that is very attractive to other people. I think that is the future, that is the bonding of peoples, is the understanding that love, although we express it separately as a small letter L love, the principle comes from a much bigger entity, and that's the capital L love, and that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's the divine, that's the reason. If you play a song of mine called For the Love of It All, you kind of get the sense of where I'm coming from in terms of how love relates to our day-to-day.
Well, Noel, thank you so much for the time today. We really appreciate you talking with us. And just a reminder to listeners that Noel is going to be performing with Peter Yarrow at the Meyer Theater in Green Bay on October 27th. And you can go to our Simply Folk calendar for more information about that performance. So thanks again, Noel. Really appreciate it.
Dan, I love talking to you. Hello, Wisconsin. See you soon.
All right. Take care.